The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
It's Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers, taking your calls and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. It's me, Matt Slick. And if you want to give me a call, all you're going to do is dial 877-207-2276. Ooh, hey, why don't you give me a call? And let's see, tomorrow night I'll be doing a thing on Clubhouse. And if you're interested in checking it out, I go in on Wednesdays, tomorrow night, and I answer questions. And it's about 2 to 3 hours that I do that. Enjoy. It's a different kind of a thing that I do here, in that I get a lot more in-depth. Last week, we got in with a guy discussing logic, and he was trying to prove God doesn't exist, and it just didn't work. So I spent about an hour with him, actually. It was kind of interesting. I always like to learn things from people. All right. Let's see. On Thursday night, I'll be teaching a Bible study, Lord willing. And looks like everything's working well. I've been spending time working on intro outros for videos, and I just can't get satisfied with what I produce. But I'm working on it. Once it's done, then the next thing to do is do videos. And so we're right about there. We are right about there. Hey, why don't you give me a call? There's nobody waiting right now. I want you to give me a call, 877-207-2276. And if you don't want to call, but you want a comment or a question for the air, all you got to do is email me at info@carm.org. info@carm.org. We've got a bunch of questions in there right now, which I can just get to. And there you go. See, really easy. Also, hey, just want to let you know, use my girl voice there. If you are interested in watching and participating in a nice chat, we have stuff going on Facebook, and we also have it in Twitter. I believe we do, right? Isn't that right, guys? I think we do still. And also on Rumble. So we're moving a lot of stuff to Rumble. We're heading and focusing on that because of the censorship that's occurring, particularly in the line of work that I do, religious expression, freedom of expression, and things like that. So there you go. And if you want, you can go to rumble.com/Matt Slick Live. Doesn't that sound cool? Matt Slick Live. And if you're a newbie and you're wondering what the show's about, my real name is, drumroll, Matt Slick. And some people don't believe me, but it is. My real name happens to work nicely for radio. And we do apologetics here. What that means is to defend the Christian faith. And really just kind of open up all kinds of stuff in discussions. We do politics, we do philosophy, UFOs, the occult, Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christian Science Unity, Baha'i, Islam, I'd say really awesome, yeah, Eastern Orthodoxy, evolution, endogenous retroviruses, universals, transcendentals, arguments for God's existence, biblical theology, and the like. Because I get to study all this kind of stuff. You know what I found out? Here's the thing. I have so much in my head that I have to basically, on a weekly basis, get into discussions. I do it on the radio, but that's not enough. I have to do it on in other venues as well. Otherwise, I start forgetting things. There's just so much in my head that I have to produce a lot of notes, for one thing. I do a lot of notes. I have notes on... notes, what I do is 8.5 by 11, you know, work in Microsoft Word, I do notes. Stuff on abortion, annihilationism, baptism, biblical apologetics, black Hebrew Israelite, Calvinism, the canon, Catholicism, Eastern Orthodoxy, government groups, Islam, stuff on, hey, look at that, that was there. Judaism, working in all kinds of things, the one in the many. That's an interesting topic, the one in the many. And I was using that, defining it and going through, trying to help people understand some of the things that are going on there with the one and the many. And so philosophy. A lot of times the atheists because their grounding is not in God, their grounding has to be in human wisdom. And so they use philosophy. The problem with that is they can't justify why the logic they use in philosophy works. It's really interesting because the philosophy that they use has to have logic, has to have rules and things like that. But what are these universal rules that everybody's appealing to? Where do they come from? That's the question. It's always a good question to ask them. Hold on, let me drink a coffee here. Oh, yes. Good coffee. All right. Yes, that's right. We got that going. And let me do some questions here and some comments from the email, because nobody's calling right now, 877-207-2276. Let's see. Okay, not that one, not that one. How about Matt? Yesterday, mother of two. Oh, yeah. I get it. Yeah, that's right. We already talked about that one. Yeah. Okay. So, let's see. I'm going through stuff. Oh, there's some stuff. What's really nice is that when I ask for information on things, a lot of times people come up with some really good stuff. And one of the things I need to do is get information on the wedding feast stuff, the document, because a lot of people are not aware of that. And some people provided links and documentation. All right. I asked you on Clubhouse about Scripture and the doctrines of grace. You offered to send me stuff on Reformed theology. I think I did send that to the person. Let's see. I think I've answered a lot of these questions here. How could you help me with a few? Okay. Will people get tricked into taking the mark of the beast? So, all right. We're talking about the return of Christ here. And a lot of people... I'm going to just step on toes, because this just makes people, when they get to roll their eyes, you know. I can just see in the car rolling their eyes. Here he goes again. A lot of people believe in the pre-tribulation rapture. And I think that the reason they do is because it's convenient and it's easy to believe. And I don't see it being taught in Scripture. Now, I hope I'm wrong. Okay, I'm not snotting on people who believe it. No, not at all. I just don't see it in Scripture. And so I think we're going to be going through stuff. I really do. And I call it depressed eschatology. And so when I talk about this with people, I get different views. And one of the views I think is interesting is postmillennialism. I may have to have a friend of mine on here sometime, and we can just talk about post-mill and some pros and cons about it, and have some discussions. I'm thinking I might do that. I've not been doing Patreon for a couple of months, and I'm thinking about starting it up again in a different format and just do interviews on people, have it set up and just do interviews. I'm thinking about doing that. So we have a half hour to an hour discussion interviews. So I'm probably just going to end up doing that, but might start that soon. And I have lots of people I could contact about all kinds of stuff. At any rate, so there's always an interest in the return of Christ. And there are many views. Now, my favorite view that I want to be true is pre-tribulation rapture. I don't care about the other stuff. As long as we get out before everything goes bad. That's my favorite view. It doesn't happen to be the one I believe, though. The least favorite view I have is the one I actually believe. Now, that's kind of interesting because I don't want to believe it. I don't like it. It's unpleasant. I think it's bad. And that's what I believe. And what I believe is that we are going to go through the tribulation. I believe we're going to see the rise of the Antichrist, and I believe that we are going to experience persecution. That's not a common thing that's taught in churches today. And I can't help but wonder if the reason, I'm not judging, I'm just thinking out loud, I can't help but wonder if part of the reason is because if they preach and teach what I say, then the people might go to churches to believe something else. You know, go something else. because my message is not encouraging. So eschatology is the study of end times, and then depreschatology is what I teach. I teach depreschatology. I teach that it's going to get bad. And I do. I believe that. And the way our country is going, it just certainly looks like it, that things are going to get worse. I don't trust at all the leaders in our government. I don't trust them anymore. I could throw an elephant. You know, they're opening the borders the way they are, and Title 42 is going to be extinct pretty soon. They're going to get flooded in with all kinds of people. Crime's on the rise. You know, it's gone. You got. And unless something changes, I think it's going to get pretty bad. So what I want to do, you know, since I'm just going about this, I think what I might do is just go to Matthew 24, which is an eschatological chapter. And I think I might just go through the whole chapter. Just read it and comment on things as I go through it. If you like that, continue to listen. If you don't, well, then you can change the channel, or you can call me up and change the topic, and that's fine. So this is Matthew 24, verse 1. Jesus came out of the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. And he said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another, which will not be torn down." So just 2 months ago, I was in Israel, and we went to the place where we saw those very stones that were toppled. We saw them. We saw the pile of stones. It was really interesting. Anyway, as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, and we've been there too, up into the Mount of Olives, it's really cool. And I actually brought back, I didn't pick anything off of trees, but there was a limb that was fallen. And so I picked up some of the olive leaves, and I have them here. So these are actual olive leaves that I got from the Mount of Olives. How about that? Anyway, so he was sitting there in the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming, and the end of the age?" So that's what's really important. So sometimes the preterists will say that 70 AD is when this was completed. The stones were torn down in 70 AD, which they were. So the preterists say, well, all this was fulfilled then. But notice what they asked him. What will be the sign of your coming? You know, when will all these things happen? That includes the stones being torn down. And what will be the sign of your coming? When will the stones be thrown down? And what the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? There's only two ages, this age and the age to come. So you're coming, and return of Christ and the end of the age. And Jesus said, "See to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many." So there's going to be a rise of false Christs. Okay, you'll be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place. But that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginnings of the birth pangs. So the preterists say all this was done by 70 AD, and that Jesus came back in 70 AD. And that's just not the case. So I'm going to continue after the break. I hope you guys are enjoying this. If you are, email me and say, "Hey, yeah, loving you going through Matthew 24 verse by verse. I want to hear it. I want to know if that's what you like." So anyway, hey, folks, we'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned.
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Hey, just want to give you thanks for listening, and hopefully this will be interesting. I'm going to show you some stuff in Matthew 24 that a lot of people don't bring out. And it also, I think there's a verse, let's see, oh man, I'm trying to remember it. We're not appointed to wrath, but salvation. Let's see. Appointed. And people will say, well, that means that you don't have to go through the tribulation period because we're not appointed to wrath, but salvation. And what that is, we're not destined. I think his word is destined in the NASB. I'm going to explain what that verse is and why they're misusing it when they say that. It's 1 Thessalonians 5:9. Okay. And so it says, God has not destined us for wrath, but for obtaining salvation. See, the wrath is juxtaposed with salvation, so it's the opposite of salvation. It's damnation. He's not appointed us or destined us for wrath, but for salvation. So it's not about pre-tribulation rapture stuff. This is just another mistake that people make when they try to interpret stuff. All right, so here we go. I'm going to go back in and go through Matthew 24, starting at verse 9. Well, actually, verse 8, I'm going to review it. It says, but these things are merely the beginnings of birth pangs. What are these things? Those things are the wars, rumors of wars, things like that. Verse 9, then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations because of my name. Now, one of the things that we need to look at here is, who is Jesus speaking to? He's speaking to the covenant people of Israel. So how much of this is applicable to us as Gentiles? So let's go on. You'll be hated by me because of my name, by all nations. Now this certainly will can appeal to the Christians as well. At that time, many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. So what he's talking about on the return of Christ. Now, that includes everybody eschatologically because the gospel's preached to everyone and now Christianity's all over the place, etc. But he says, they'll deliver you to tribulation and it'll kill you. And you'll be hated by all nations because of my name. Now, is this pre-tribulation rapture theology? Jesus saying, they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. Is he speaking only to the Jews, or is he speaking to the Christians? That's the question. Okay. So at that time, many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. So there's going to be, inside the Christian church, there's going to be a great apostasy. Now, this is talked about by Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2, a falling away from the truth. And Matthew 24:11, many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness has increased, most people's love will grow cold. That's something I have noticed. I've noticed it a lot, is that the love of people is growing cold. Not everybody. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there. And the people who work with me in the ministry here, they're very loving, very good people. But overall, the love of people is growing cold. That's my impression in the world, particularly here in America. But to the one who endures to the end will be saved. And some people use that verse to try and prove that you can lose your salvation because if you don't endure, you're not going to be saved. That's not what he's talking about in salvation. You endure through it, you're going to survive it. That's what he's talking about there. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. This is why I don't believe this is only aimed at the Jews. Because of this verse, Matthew 24:14, the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world. So the Jews aren't doing that now. The Christians are doing that because the Jews rejected the Messiah, broke the covenant, and so we, the Gentiles, were grafted in. And the gospel will be preached as a testimony, a witness to all the nations. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to accept it. But it is a proclamation of truth, and the world is going to reject it. It's a testimony against them, a testimony to all the nations. This is what the truth is. And he says, and then the end will come. So the gospel has to proceed out to all the nations. And that's basically happening now. Anyway, verse 15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing at the holy place. Now, some think it was Antiochus Epiphanes, some think it was Nero, some think some other things. I'm not going to get into that because there's a lot there. So, there's Yeah, there's a lot there. Daniel 9, it talks about this. But anyway, it says, those who were in Judea must flee to the mountains. Whoever's on the housetop must not go down to get the things that are out in his house. Whoever's in the field must not turn back and get his cloak. So the persecution that occurred in 70 AD was fulfilled in part in this pericope, in the idea that they had to flee to the mountains. People were trapped in Jerusalem, and the Roman soldiers encompassed it, and it was horrible. Like for 2 years, they just starved them out, and it became really bad inside there, eating people. It was that kind of famine. So when I look at Matthew 24, what I'm seeing is an analysis or a declaration by Christ where he speaks of Israel and other stuff. And I think he's mixing them together. That's what I think. Because I think this part here, when you see the abomination of desolation, if you're in Judea, flee. And the housetops, don't go down and get your stuff. Run. Because that means it's going to come quickly. Now, this is something a lot of people don't recognize, is that if this applies only to the Jews, it makes sense. The Roman Empire was coming into Jerusalem and doing some major butt-kicking. If it's also in reference to the arrival of the Antichrist and the leftist socialist commies who are going to oppress us, and or maybe the Muslims who might gain power along with the Antichrist, who knows? Because the Muslims, it's an evil religion and full of death. It's a death cult is what it is. And so they kill people and chop people's heads off. So some people think it might be them. I'm just throwing ideas around here, but we don't know. So whoever's in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. In other words, just run. You'll have time to prep if you see things coming. But if you don't know it's coming and all of a sudden there it is, just run. That's what he's saying. So it's going to be fast. Woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And here's the thing. Well, doesn't Jesus love his people? Why would he let this persecution happen to women who are pregnant and nursing? It's just going to happen. You know, I'm reminded of my wife's situation. I talk about her every now and then. She has one of the rarest connective tissue disorders in the world called Lewis Dietz. And, you know, I pray for her every night. And laid hands on her last night, was praying for her back, as a matter of fact, and that her bones would be strengthened and her scoliosis would strengthen. So why is it God is not healing her? No, I'm not complaining. But God certainly lets us go through things, doesn't he? He lets us go through. I had my eye exam today, and they found something in the eye, and they had to do a double check. Everything's okay. But sometimes things are not okay with people, and we got to go through stuff. Why does God let us go through this stuff, not just deliver us? Because it's his will to do that, and there's reasons we could offer. But nevertheless, there's a break. We'll be right back after these messages. We'll continue with this. Hope you're enjoying it. God bless. Be right back.
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Hey, everyone, welcome back to the show. All right, if you want to give me a call, 877-207-2276. All right, let's get back to our little examination of Matthew 24. All right, so let's see, here we go. All right, whoever's in the field, don't turn back, woe to those who are pregnant and nursing. Verse 20, but pray that your flight will not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. So there are going to be some times, seasons, just hope it isn't bad, but it's just going to be bad. I mean, could you imagine you're with children and or pregnant and it's in the dead of winter and you have to flee? It's just going to be rough. And this is what Jesus is alluding to. And he says, for then there will be tribulation, such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will. It doesn't fit Jerusalem. The Holocaust was worse than what happened in Jerusalem in 70 AD. So he says, now notice what he's saying. He says, and then there will be great tribulation. Don't turn back. Don't do anything. You'll see the abomination of desolation. So it looks like the Antichrist, one of the theories is that he's going to, in the middle of the seven-year period, he's going to appear in the, manifest himself, not manifest, you know, suddenly appear, but I mean, he's going to go into the temple, proclaim to be God. And this is the abomination of desolation. And so this is the midpoint of the tribulation period. So then he says this, and this verse has always intrigued me, this next verse. He says in Matthew 24:22, unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Now that's a really interesting verse to me. If those days aren't cut short, no life would be saved. Now the word for life is sarx, and it means the flesh of a living creature, distinction to what that which is dead. So no life, no flesh would be saved. Now that's interesting. It doesn't say no human people will be saved. Is talking about flesh itself. So, could this then be that there's going to be a nuclear holocaust, and that it's going to get so bad that it's going to destroy life on the planet? Now, at this point, I'm going to tie it back to something. Genesis chapter 2, verse 17. Now, you can understand something here. In Genesis chapter 2, God is commanding Adam. He says, from any tree of the garden you may eat freely, verse 17, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat from it you will surely die. So what's interesting is that he says to Adam, the day that you eat, you're going to die. Now, Adam ate. Now, some people say, well, that day he didn't die. Well, yes, he did. He was then in a state of sinful separation from God, and the manifestation of that spiritual reality was physical death, which occurred later. So, yes, he did die, because that's what God said would happen. And so the day is not a 24-hour period here. It's a longer period of time in the day, and it means that you're going to die, and that did occur right then in the spiritual death that he had. So he was talking to Adam. Now, here's the thing. We have the doctrine of federal headship, where the male represents the descendants. Now, sin entered the world through one man, Romans 5:12, and through Adam. Adam represented everything. You can go to 1 Corinthians 15:22. In Adam all die. And Romans 5:18, which says through one transgression there resulted condemnation to all men. Romans 5:19. Through the one sin, the many were made sinners. So the one trespass, one sin against that Adam did, the many were made sinners. So this is an action that occurred to us in Adam. So here's the thing. I can't help, this is just my opinion, I can't help but wonder that when God was speaking to Adam, he was speaking to Adam and all who were in Adam. You eat of this, you're going to die. Now, I cross-reference that with Matthew 24:22. Unless those days had not been cut short, no life would be saved. To me, it makes sense to say that Adam's sin will result in the self-destruction of all mankind. That is the logical manifestation and ramification of what it is to have sin in the world due to Adam's rebellion. So what I suspect is that, this is my view, okay, I'm going to get into this more, but my view, where I really strongly lead to, is that because of Matthew 24:22, if those days be not cut short, no flesh would be left, no life would be left, that what's going to happen is that mankind's going to destroy itself unless Jesus intervenes. And I think that there's going to be a gigantic, multi-thousand-year, I told you so. Genesis 2:17, the day you eat it, you're going to die. And if no flesh should be, if these days not be cut short, no flesh should be left. See, I told you so. It's the return of Christ right before mankind will destroy itself. We have the ability to do that with biological weapons and also with nuclear weapons. There's enough nuclear weaponry in the world to destroy every man, woman, and child and just completely obliterate the planet and knock out all life. It's like that. So now notice what he says. Unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Now, this doesn't say for the sake of the Christians. It doesn't say for the sake of the good people or the Jews. It says for the elect. That's a theological term used to designate the ones that God the Father has chosen for salvation, the elect people. We'll get into that another time. So for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. In other words, I believe that Jesus is going to step in at the last minute and stop the self-destruction of mankind. That's my view. That's why I call it depressgatology. It's going to get that bad. In verse 23, then if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Christ, or there he is, don't believe him. See, people are going to say he's returned, or he's going to return here or there. No, the promise in Acts 1, 9 through 11 of how Christ is going to return is that it'll be from the heavens. He's going to come back. And he says, verse 24, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. So false Christs, there have been those, and false prophets like Joseph Smith or Muhammad, false prophets, Charles Taze Russell, and others. Anyway, they will arise. And now here's what's confusing. It says they will show great signs or give great signs. Now it seems to be, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs. So it looks like the ones he's specifically talking about are going to have a lot of miraculous ability. They're going to show great signs and wonders to so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Now, what's interesting is the elect here is the Greek word eklektos. And the word for church is ekklesia. Interesting. Eklektos is a chosen one. Ekklesia is the church. Interesting, huh? So it says that to mislead, if possible, even the elect. In other words, they're not going to be deceived. So here's a question. Are you one of the elect? Are you one of the chosen one of God? Are you one of the people who have been chosen for salvation? And how do you know? Do you believe in the true gospel? Do you believe in the true God? Not a God from another world like Mormonism teaches. How about a true gospel and not the one of Jehovah's of Catholicism or Eastern Orthodoxy, works righteousness? So the elect won't be deceived by those false teachings. That's interesting. I could take a tangent and go off on that. It'd be interesting, but I won't. Behold, I've told you in advance. So that means listen to him. He says, so if they say to you, behold, he's in the wilderness, do not go out. Or behold, he's in the inner rooms, don't believe him. He's just giving an example. If he's here, or they say he's here or there, don't go. He is in the wilderness. He is in the inner room. That means he's already there. That's not how it's going to be. It's going to be as verse 27, for just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. That's what he says. That's how it's going to be. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. So there's going to be, why does he talk about this? Where the corpse is, the vultures will gather. There's going to be death, destruction. This is not pre-trib rapture stuff. This is not post-mill stuff. This is depressed eschatology, all right? And when we get back, I'll go over some more of this stuff. And we'll get to the end of it, hopefully, before the...
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show, the last segment. I guess you're enjoying my teaching on this. We're going to get some interesting stuff here. Hey, thanks, Marsha, for the $25 rant in In Rumble. Really appreciate that. That's really nice. And also, there was a, let's see, on Mark Perdon, 50 stars. I'm not sure what that means, so maybe someone could alert me what that means. That's a good thing, though. All right, let me continue with what I was saying here. It says in Matthew 24:29, we continue, and it says, but immediately after the tribulation of those days. What's the tribulation of those days? False Christs, false prophets, flee, false teachings about the return of Christ. And it says, as the lightning comes from the east and goes to the west, that's how the Son of Man will be coming. It doesn't say he's returned at this point. But he's just saying this is how it's going to be. They're going to say he's in the heat. He's already here. That's not how it's going to be. So watch out for what it's really going to be. So there's going to be the abomination of desolation. There's going to be great tribulation. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. False prophets, false Christ, miracles are going to be shown. And then he says, but immediately after the tribulation of those days, after it. Now, if you're pre-trib rapture, think about this. Verse 29, Jesus says, but immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Now, this kind of language is Old Testament judgment language. And is it literal? Well, that's another discussion right there. Moon will not give its light. That would make sense if there was a nuclear thing. So it'll be darkened. Volcanoes. Who knows? It could be all kinds of things. We'll get into that. So the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky. The powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and glory. That's how he's going to return. The preterists say that he returned in 70 AD in the armies. That's not what Jesus says. The preterists are just wrong. They are wrong. Period. They are wrong. But notice what is going on here. Jesus says, immediately after the tribulation, the sun will be dark and the moon will give its light. The sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. This is after the tribulation, okay? And he's coming in great power and glory. And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather his elect from the four winds from one end of the sky to the other. So that's what's going to happen at the return of Christ. Now, when you go to 1 Thessalonians 4:16, for the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with a voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of God. The dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain will be caught up together with them in the clouds and meet the Lord in the air. And so we'll always be with the Lord. So that's what he's talking about here. He'll send forth his angels with a great trumpet, because it says in 1 Thessalonians 4:16, with the trumpet of God. And he says the angels come with a great trumpet. So this is not before the tribulation period. This is not pre-trib rapture. It's just not there. And he will send forth his angels. This is after the tribulation. And he'll gather his elect. And that's why the word elect is so important to be studied. Because what does it mean? It means the chosen ones from the foundation of the world. And I can get into that. It's another tangent. So this is what he says. He says, after the tribulation of those times, that's when it's going to occur. That's when the return of Christ is going to be, and that's when the trumpet will occur in which the elect are gathered. Is that pre-trib rapture? Because if that's the case, then that means that he returns before then, and he's going to return a second time. Now some say, well, it's not a full return the first time. Well, it doesn't matter, because that's when he comes to get his people. Does he get his people twice? Before the tribulation? After the tribulation? And the third time after the millennial reign? Is that what's going on? Of course not. So this does not make any sense if you see this. So he goes on and he says, now learn from the parable of the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and put forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Now, he's talking about the future, when you see them. So he's talking to everybody, to the Christians in the future. Truly, truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. That's why I hold to the idea that this generation is not the generation of Jesus' time, but the future one, because of the context of what's happening. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. Now in Luke 17, it says the flood came and destroyed them all. They were eating, they were drinking, they were giving in marriage, till the flood came and destroyed them all. And so they were eating and they were drinking till the flood came and took them all away. That's the wicked. The wicked are the ones who are destroyed. The wicked are the ones who are taken. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then there will be two men in a field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one will be left. Those are commonly used pre-tribulation verses, pre-tribulation rapture verses. But they're not about the rapture. They're about the wicked being taken. I just read the context. And if you do a parallel, Luke 17, 26. He says, just as it happened in the days of Noah, so shall it also be the days of the Son of Man. They were eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, till that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. The ones who were destroyed are the ones who were eating, drinking, and marriage. And in Matthew 24, the ones who were eating, drinking, and marrying are the ones who were taken. They didn't understand. The flood came and took them all away. So, will be the coming of the Son of Man. Two will be in the field, one is taken, one is left. That's the wicked. Now, what I'd like to do at this point is to cross-reference it with Matthew 13, starting right around verse 30, because it says, the parable of the wheat and the tares. And they said in verse 28 of Matthew 13, who put the seed there? The tares. And Jesus says, an enemy has done this. The slave said to him, do you want us then to go and gather them up? He said, no. Well, while you're gathering the tares, you may uproot the wheat with them. Allow both to go together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather up the tares. The first ones gathered are the tares, and gather them up in bundles to burn them up. Well, that's what Jesus is saying. And then if you go to Matthew 13:40, just as the tares are gathered up and burned with fire, so shall it be at the end of the age. So the ones who are taken are the wicked. The first ones taken at the harvest, at which is the end of the age, are the wicked. That's what Jesus is teaching. Now, this is the opposite of what is taught in a lot of churches today. It's the opposite. No, pre-tribulation rapture will be taken out and the wicked will be judged later. But from what I see in Scripture, that's opposite of what Christ is teaching. Will not be taken first out, but will be taken later. The first who are taken are not the good, but the wicked. They're taken to a place of judgment. That's what I see in Scripture. I don't see this pre-tribulation rapture. I don't see any of it. That's just my opinion. I don't see it. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see it. And so, Jesus goes on and he talks about be ready for his coming. So I've already talked about this quite a bit as I've gone through verse by verse. This is not a super in-depth analysis, but I got some questions for you. Have any of you ever heard this before, this kind of teaching? This is just verse by verse. I'm not adding anything in, just looking at it. What gets me is, why is it so many teachers today use the one man in the field, one is taken, one is two men in the field, one is taken, one is left. They say that's the rapture, when it's not. Now that one I will just say, no, I'm sorry, but you're wrong if you say it's the rapture. It's just not, okay? The rapture is talked about in 1 Thessalonians 4, starting at verse 16. And the rapture does occur. The question is when. It's just that two men in the field, one is taken, one is left. That's not the rapture because the wicked are taken. And in Luke 17, I forgot to tell you. But in Luke 17, they said, the same thing, buying, selling, they were planning, building, etc. They were doing all the stuff. no one knew, and the flood came and destroyed them all. And then Jesus goes on and he says, whoever is to keep his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. So Luke 17 is what I'm reading. Now verse 34, I tell you, on that night there'll be two in one bed, and one will be taken and the other will be left. There'll be two women grinding at the same place. One will be taken and the other will be left. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other will be left. And answering, they said to him, where, Lord? Now, he's going to answer. I'm going to read what his answer is. But here's the thing. I am blown away that so many Bible teachers read these verses, two men in the field, one is taken, one is left, it's the rapture, and they don't read the context, they don't read what's going on. I just can't get it. Why are they not doing this? Why are they not doing their homework? Do they belong to a denomination, and that's their position? They always got to teach that position? I hope that's not the case. But it does disturb me that something as simple as this is so easily missed. How else are they erring? What else are they not seeing in Scripture? Because of presuppositions that they let interpret the Scriptures. That's a concern I have. Okay, so he says, where are they taken? Where, Lord? And he answered them, where the body is, there also the vultures will be gathered. So two men in the field, one is taken, one is left. The one who is taken is the wicked. And where are they taken to? Where the body is, there also the vultures will be gathered. Now, isn't that interesting? What I'm going to do right now, we only have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to jump to a place and introduce a concept, and this is just for fun. This is just for fun. I'm not saying this is right, but just for fun, okay? I'm going to go to Revelation 16, starting at verse 13. And I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits like frogs. And they are spirits of demons performing signs, which go out to the kings of the whole world to gather them together for the war of the great day of God Almighty. Behold, I am coming like a thief. Blessed is the one who stays awake and keeps his clothes, so they will not wake up naked, and men will not see his shame. And they gathered them together to the place which in Hebrew is called Armageddon. Three unclean spirits like frogs go out. What do frogs do? They hop. One taken, one is left. I don't know if that means anything. I don't know if it's to be put together. I don't know if I'm just reaching. I just am saying that for entertainment value and purposes. To where they're taken, where the body is, the vultures gather, sounds like maybe they're taken to a place of death, Armageddon, for judgment. Maybe. Hey, there you go. I hope you enjoyed that exegetical hour. Instead of questions and answers, I just went for it and enjoyed it. So may the Lord bless you by His grace. We should be on the air tomorrow. And I'd like your feedback on this. Email me at info@carm.org. Love to talk to you and hear about it. God bless, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless. Bye.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.